Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. You know I'm happy that you're here with me and my guest today. So my quote is by William Arthur Ward, and he says, "The mediocre teacher tells, the good teacher explains, the superior teacher demonstrates, the great teacher inspires." So leadership, or let me just say lack thereof, seems to be one of our big topics in organizations around the world. There's so much information about good leadership versus the bad, yet most leaders, I think, struggle in penetrating their corporate cultures to change to the quality-driven leadership culture that maybe we're hoping to do. And why is that? Now, most of you are practicing or are picturing a leader, maybe or two, in your organization, and you're thinking, how the heck did they get to the executive level when they're one of the worst leaders I've ever experienced? And then you think to yourself, well, how the heck does this even happen, and how do we stop the madness? Well, of course you're in store for a treat today. My guest is Scott Miller. Now, Scott is entering his 23rd year with Franklin Covey and serves as the executive, executive vice president of thought leadership. Now, Scott leads the strategy development and publication of Franklin Covey's best-selling books and thought leadership programs. He's the author of Franklin Covey's Management Mess to Leadership Success, 30-Day Challenges to Become the Leader You Would Follow. We're going to talk about that today. He's also the host of two shows, Franklin Covey on Leadership with Scott Miller and Great Life, Great Career with Scott Miller on iHeartRadio. Both are weekly leadership webcasts, podcasts, and newsletters that feature interviews with renowned business titans, authors, and thought leaders around the world. These shows provide insight and strategies to assist listeners to becoming more effective as business leaders and to improve their personal performance. Sign me up. Please help me welcome my wonderful guest, Scott. So, Scott, thanks for being on.
Connie, I'm so important. Hey, how important I am.
Isn't that, you know, it's so cute, Scott. I think sometimes when we hear our credentials read out loud, we think, wow, have I done all that? So it's kind of cool, right?
My publicist has got to cut that down. That was way too long. You delivered it beautifully, but I got to cut that down.
Okay, cut it down. You know what's funny?
Honored to be on your show.
I am honored to have you here. So my first question is, why did you write, and I love the title, Management Mess to Leadership Success?
Yeah, can you believe the book has been on the Amazon number one new release for 3 weeks now? It's been number one for 3 weeks on Amazon. Nice. I think it's number one because of the reason why I wrote it. So I've been in the Franklin Covey firm for 23 years. I was kind of raised by Dr. Covey for about 17 of those years. He passed about 7 years ago. And I worked my way up the ladder, and it's been an amazing ride. And one thing I've learned along the way is that, Connie, leadership isn't for everyone. Leading people is not the right role for everybody. And I think too often leaders are lured, not led, into a leadership role. It's the next obvious promotion. It's the next raise. And people become leaders for the wrong reasons. They're not kind of entering it eyes wide open. I'm not sure I should have been a leader of people. I was a great salesperson, a great marketer, worked really hard. Those aren't the talents to be a leader of people. So after 23 years in the business and interviewing literally hundreds of experts, I realized, you know, most leadership books are very aspirational. They're kind of academic, about mission and vision and values. That's very important. And about systems and structures and strategies. That's very important. But I wanted to write a leadership book that was really relatable, that was even raw, to say, you know what? My journey's been a bit of a mess. Kind of, you know, one step forward, two steps back. And I wanted to make it safe to be vulnerable, to just admit our messes, right? Everybody's not a complete mess, and everybody's not a complete success. We're all kind of a bit of both, and everybody's got a mess, and you need to own up to it, because your boss knows your mess, your spouse knows your mess, your employees are talking about your mess. So why not just lower the fear, raise the culture, admit your messes, don't rest in them, but you know, Mood to Success, because you'll unleash amazing talent people if they feel it safe to discuss their own messes, because the boss sets the culture. So I wrote that book, and it's, I think, swept the market by storm. It sold close to, you know, it sold 7,000 copies the first week. It sold another 5,000 copies. So 2 weeks in, I'm overwhelmed. I think it's because people want to feel safe. They want to acknowledge their mistakes and be in a culture with a leader that will let them do that. So that's why I wrote the book.
I love it. And I have a question for you. You said that you probably shouldn't have been a leader. Have you learned to be a leader?
Yeah, I think so. You know, when I was younger, I was the student body president in my high school. And I was the manager of the local restaurant. And, you know, I had a fairly charismatic personality and I worked hard. And these aren't necessarily traits that are associated with being a great leader of people, especially in, you know, a professional organization. So I started to realize great leaders are good listeners. They're humble.
I agree.
They provide a safe space to admit your mistakes. Not everything has to be done your way. Other great people can get the same result even better by doing it different ways. So there's no question I'm a better leader today than I was last month, last year, last decade. I mean, read the book. There are some horror stories in here of just insane things that I did. Not illegal or unethical or immoral, but just like you said, what? You did what, Scott? And I think coming from a leadership company, it was a little bit risky and avant-garde, but our CEO was very supportive of me telling my story, because I think there's a lot of people out there, millions like me, that aren't natural leaders that want to learn to be better. So these 30 challenges that I write about, I just kind of spill my guts and say, hey, I stepped in the pothole, deep in the pothole. Read this story and help to navigate around the challenge that I kind of fell flat on my face with.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, with social media and all of the exposure, everybody has a phone that has a camera now. So we're exposed so much more, I think, when we make a mistake. Everybody's like, look, 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 they made a mistake. So I think that we have to not, I don't want to say overcompensate, that's not the right word, but I think we have to learn how to navigate. And I like how you said potholes, because I'm sorry, we hit potholes all the time because we're dealing with other humans. We're not dealing with robots. So what if you had to pick, what characteristics do you think jump out as you've done the research over the years that you would say, this is a great leader? What would those characteristics look like for you?
Yeah, there's a couple. I think one that I struggle with is moving from an efficiency mindset to an effectiveness mindset. You know, Dr. Covey would always talk to me about the difference between being efficient and being effective. As you know, I'm a very efficient person, Connie. I like to do lists, check things off. On Saturday morning, I'm at Home Depot a half an hour before it's open, ready to buy my flowers and get them planted. And you can be efficient with marigolds, you know? You can't be efficient with people. With people, to quote Stephen Covey, slow is fast and fast is slow. So I think great leaders realize that relationships are the backbone of your culture, and that you want to slow down with people and really be effective. Now, there's times to be efficient, right? Hey, can I ask you a quick question? That's fine. Not everything takes an hour, right? But there is a general principle that with people, just slow down, be more effective, make sure that people understand that you care about them, you love them appropriately in the workplace. I think with the Me Too movement, which is well justified,
we've swung
a bit far on, you know, kind of keeping things distant. You know, the fact of the matter is, Connie, and you know this, we spend more time at work with our colleagues than we do awake with our family and friends. So you might as well build a culture where you love and respect and adore and appreciate people. So over everything, slow down and remember that relationships are everything in life. Your job is your career. Your job is not your life. Don't confuse those two, and make sure when you're at your job that people know that you care. Everyone's got something going on. Everyone's got a bill they can't afford to pay. Everyone's got a health issue, a teenager they're struggling with, a marriage that isn't as good as you think it is. Everyone's got a struggle. Even the people who look like they don't, they're just hiding it better. And I think people crave a leader that is vulnerable, admits their mistakes, lets their guard down, shares their own messes, and makes it safe to share your own. I mean, I kind of said the same thing there. I think it's the number one issue.
And it's funny because, you know, you use the word relationship, you use the word love, which is very interesting because we're afraid to say the word love in the workplace. Yet when you work with people every day, they're your family. They are your family. So how can you not feel an affinity and a love towards people, especially people that you're leading and trying to? And when I think of leadership, I think of inspiring. Who's going to inspire us to move to the next level or to bring us to our next level of greatness or our next position? And you have to inspire people, but I believe you have to love and build those relationships along the way. It's funny. At first, I want to just comment. How lucky were you to be able to train for 17 years under Stephen Covey? I mean, that blows my mind. He is one of, you know, every time, I don't care what leadership program you go into or what programs you listen to, quotes, books, the library of books that he's written. So how lucky are you, man? That must have been an amazing experience.
It has been. Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, it's in its 30th year.
Yeah.
It has sold 30 million copies. We're re-releasing it in 2020 with his son, Sean Covey, writing some new insights, who, of course, wrote the book, 7 Habits of Teens. And so it's been an amazing journey. Stephen Covey was a man of uncompromised character. He was the real deal. I'll tell you, one of the things that I've done well in my career, there's only a couple, and one of them was I had the maturity always what I call friend up, which was to associate myself with people who were smarter than me, more better traveled, better educated, that were older than me. And Dr. Covey was one of those. You know, instead of going and playing beer pong or going to, you know, the Adirondacks with my college friends, I probably should have done more of that. I really always friended up with people who were older and wiser. And it's been one of the smartest things I've ever done. And it sounds kind of self-serving. It wasn't self-serving because they benefited from being around me, whatever it was. But I think it's a great career strategy. Associate with yourself with people who are smarter, who are more seasoned, who are trustworthy, who have solid reputations, and just absorb all you can, because you become the person you hang out with. You become the type of leader that you respect and that you aspire to be, that you see. I'm a passionate evangelist around friending up in the workplace also.
And it's funny, I learned that so long ago. Someone mentor, you know, years ago said, always find someone that's at least 10 years older than you and pick their brain and learn. And again, someone you would respect because they've been there, done that before you. They might save you a step or two. Not that you shouldn't make your own mistakes, but maybe you'll learn from theirs and be able to pivot forward a lot quicker. So
And go on vacation. Go on, you know, go skiing with them. Yeah. Go out, you know, hiking with them, right? Develop a friendship because they're going to learn from you. Everybody who's my age is looking for, I'm 51, we're looking for people younger than us to talk about social media and, you know, and digital space and algorithms. And I need to learn from younger people as well. So the benefit works both ways.
I agree. And it's very funny. You know, my business, I teach classes. My expertise is sales and service and coaching. And, you know, the younger people coming through my classes now, right, the new wave, and that the next wave is going to be the Gen Zs, but the millennials, it's very interesting. Those that are hungry, like you were, and understanding, let me pick this person's brain. They seem to know a lot. They've got it together, semi-together. And they'll approach me after class and say, listen, will you mentor me or help me or tell me what books to read? And this is always my response. Yes, I will, but you got to do what I tell you to do. You don't waste my time. Right? That's my number one rule. Number two is you reverse mentor me. I don't know the social media. I don't know what are the best podcasts I should be listening to. What apps should I be downloading to make me more efficient than always having that paper, because I'm a paper pencil person. So very important that we stay relevant by being groomed and mentored by the generations below us, so we stay relevant as well as we age. I agree, and I'm 57, so I like what you just said. I agree with that
100%. Connie, you need a TV program. I love you. You are so well-served. outspoken. You're so generous. Why do you not have your own reality program?
I should.
Or maybe us together. You and me together.
Could you imagine we take the world by storm? I love you. Hey, someday, I always say someday I'm going to be on TV. And it's very cute that you say that because one of my missions in life, obviously sales is what I do. But I believe that to sell to people, you have to it's like you were saying, build relationships. If I don't understand the customer that's sitting in front of me, matter what I'm selling through my career, how can I help them? And my job is to help and inspire people to want to make the right decisions to enhance their financial position. My background is finance or whatever you're selling. So it's funny that you say that because I would love to be on TV. I definitely speak better than I write. So for me, like you wrote the book, I'm in awe of that. For me to sit down and write a book is hard, you know?
Can I tell you, most books increasingly are dictated. Now, I wrote mine, but it's very frequent. I know quite a bit about the book industry. It's very frequent to have people dictate the chapter into their phone, and it costs like $1 to have it transcribed in real time. It's very common now, so don't sell yourself short.
Oh, that's interesting.
Now, I'll tell you what. I'll have you on my TV program when it happens, okay?
I love it. I absolutely love it. That's a deal. So now I want to shift a little bit. And I want to say new business. I know we're not, but we are. New business cultures of openness and community shaped the leaders of today. What have you seen be the big trends with that?
Well, you know, I can take that a lot of different ways. I mean, I'm seeing that the demographic change in the workplace is monumental. I mean, you know, boomers, honestly, the people that are our age are moving out of the workplace.
Absolutely.
And there's a sea of people coming in. And these are hardworking, smart people that have different values. They're very focused on social consciousness and what is the footprint of the company politically, right? We see it yesterday in the paper, all the employees that are picketing Wayfair, their own employer, because they chose to, I think it was sell furniture to some of the immigration, places down on the border and such. I mean, there's a huge social consciousness happening. I think the loyalty to companies is over. You know, the average lifespan of a career for a Gen Xer now is like 18 months. For you and I, it was 10, 15 years.
Absolutely.
And they don't see it as being disloyal. They see it as being part of their evolution. So I think there's this new workplace has to accommodate the new profile professional, right? People want to have life balance. They don't want to work 80 hours a week. They'll work 60 hours a week, smart and faster than perhaps even you and I would do it.
Sure.
But they want, the rules are different. And the leadership has to accommodate the fact that the work landscape has changed. You know, virtual, I mean, so many people are working virtually now. I mean, I hear the trends are in a couple of years, there'll be as many people working virtually as there are people that are getting in their car and driving 30 minutes to the office, right? And that has massive complication because, you know, people don't quit their jobs. They quit their bosses and they quit their cultures.
Yep.
And it can be very lonely working from home. It can be isolating. So the pressure on leaders today is fundamentally different than when you and I were, you know, leading a team of 18 people in a building. Everyone worked 8 to 6 every day. It's just transforming faster than we can keep up. So the nimble, flexible, learning leader is always thinking about my number one job, recruit, retain. Number one job, how do I make sure that my ego is checked, that my humility is high, and that I'm comfortable recruiting and retaining people smarter than me? The leader's job is not to be the genius, it's to be the genius maker of others, to quote Liz Wiseman in her book Multipliers. So I think it's a fast world and leadership skills are changing.
And rapidly, you're right, I agree. And the other thing that I see is, because let's face it, there's still a lot of baby boomers in the leadership roles at the higher executive levels. It is what it is, right? We have the experience, et cetera. But I often see these leaders that they dictate and tell and demand instead of collaborating, and you just you're not going to survive, or you're not going to retain the quality employees, because the good ones are going to say, I don't need this, you're talking down to me, who do you think you are, I bring something to the table too, and they're going to leave and go to an organization who appreciates them. Or you end up in that kind of environment, creating such a hostile environment, people just they leave without even having another job because the stress level is too high. It's not healthy.
Connie, so well said. No one wakes up in the morning and sets out to be a jackass.
I agree.
Or to be, you know, a sociopath. No one wakes up and says, how can I make Connie's day miserable, right?
Yeah.
It comes from well-intended leaders that don't have yet the skills, or they have insecurities. We both have them. You and I have them, right?
Absolutely.
I once heard something so wise from a friend of mine. She said, you think they don't know. They do. So to all the leaders out there, the teams that you're leading, they know your messes and successes. They know your insecurities. They know your strengths. Just let your guard down and let people bring their own talents and joys to the job. I understand, you know, you own the EBITDA. You own the supply chain. You own the cost of goods. You own the quarterly results. You can't abdicate that. There is this level of calibration that changes sometimes by the minute. How much do you coach? How much do you tell? How much do you inspire? How much do you lead? How much do you manage? How much do you empower? How many high courage conversations do you have? I think oftentimes leaders aren't willing to discuss the undiscussables and say, Connie, you know, I want you to succeed here. You're going to have a great job here, but the report that you are responsible for has so many mistakes in it. I have got to have you own this. I'm going to sit down with you for 15 minutes and point out all the things you did right, and all the areas that I want you to nail next week. You've got to have it right next week, or we're going to have a discussion around whether you can stay here or not. And then sit back, let them ask any questions, and trust that they'll do one of these things, two things. They'll nail it, or they won't bring their best game to the table, and then they've got to have a conversation around, you know, it's not working.
Yeah, but that's their decision.
That's their decision.
Yeah.
I think too often leaders are too insecure about their own brand, their own reputation, and they're too cowardly. Sit down, have a respectful, high courage conversation. You can tell someone the truth without damaging their self-esteem or injuring their self-worth. Calibrate it, role play it, talk to people. People want to be inspired, right? As to quote your quote as you open the program, they want to be coached, they want to learn, they don't want to be managed, they don't want to be micromanaged. And so I think, to your point, leaders have to always be calibrating, what role am I in right now? And the role might change in 30 minutes.
It's true. My husband and I, we have a house down the shore, and we went to set it up for July 4th weekend, and we're in the car, you know, an hour. So we're chatting. And I said, I don't understand. When I look back on my career before I started my business 18 years ago, I said, you know, I've had 10 bosses. One of the 10, Scott, were inspiring, and I always say I worked so hard for him because he motivated me, and not because I was going to get a promotion or anything like that. He was so inspiring, and he really listened to our ideas. He collaborated with us. You know, I was in my early 30s at the time. He really relished and embraced all of us with tremendous respect. One out of 10, you know, in my 20-year career before opening my business. Like, why? That's a tragic statistic. And I bet people listening, Scott, are saying, I have the same. You probably, well, you had Stephen Covey. You don't count.
I've both had the boss, and I've been the bad boss.
Because
I have all my messes. I mean, I've been on both sides, right?
Yes.
I didn't wake up. How do I destroy the culture today, right?
Yeah.
I was kind of doing my best.
Yeah.
There's two points I want to make that further validate your drive to the shore. One is the statistics show the average person in the U.S. gets promoted to their first manager role at the age of 30. And on average, their first leadership training is at the age of 42.
Ugh.
There's a 12-year span where most new leaders are just like lost in the desert, kind of doing the best they can. And they're doing damage on people. And it goes to my earlier point, Connie. Not everybody should be a leader of people. There's no shame in saying, you know what? I just want to be a great salesperson, because rarely does the top salesperson make the best sales leader, because they're misaligned. The top salesperson usually is very driven. They're very competitive. They like the spotlight on them. They want to win. They want to earn the accolade. And those are counterintuitive. None of those characteristics make for a great sales leader. A great sales leader checks their ego. They understand that the team needs to win, not them. That their job is to coach and inspire others and turn the spotlight onto other people. So I just want to tell all your listeners, there is no shame in saying, you know what, I'm not sure leading people is the right job for me. I think too often companies lure people into the next paycheck, the next title, the bigger office. Absolutely. And the only career promotion is to be a leader of people. And then what happens, Connie, and you know this well too closely, is people find themselves in these leadership jobs and they hate them. And they find that it's adult sitting, right? And it's, you know, talking to people about their punctuality or their personal hygiene, right? Or their ability to ever admit that they're wrong, or pointing fingers like, you didn't learn this in kindergarten? But that's a lot what leadership is teaching these, quote, soft skills. And now what happens? Your star salesperson becomes the sales leader and they flame out. And now they're too embarrassed to step back down and they leave. And now you've lost your leadership pipeline and you've lost your star salesperson. And it's like insanity going over and over again. So to the leaders out there, be very deliberate around who you recruit into leadership. Tell them the truth. Walk them through what it's going to be like. What types of new skills are they going to have to learn? And give them the option to say, you know what? No, thank you. I just want to be the best dental hygienist, or the best digital designer, or the best salesperson. Let me go kill that and be proud of that. I think there's been a bit of shaming and a disservice done in the industry to say, well, everyone should be a leader. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I agree. And I know when I you know, meet different people all through all the different companies I work for, and they'll say, oh, I'm a babysitter. I want to scream, you're a babysitter, then shame on you. You're not a very good babysitter. Right? You should be inspiring the team around you. I have a question for you, Scott. What are the principles? I want to go back to the book for a sec. What are the principles or practices and the 30 leadership challenges in the book, yeah, based on, and how do they help the reader become a better leader? Let's say, yeah, I don't have these natural leadership skills that we're discussing right now.
Yeah, it's quite simple. So when we designed the book, we put up onto the wall, you know, 150 different challenges that every leader faces. And that would have been a suicide mission to write a book with 150 challenges. So we culled them down into about 30. And the first 8 of them are really about leading yourself. The next dozen are about leading others. And the last about dozen are getting results. But it's kind of a start anywhere, go everywhere book. I mean, some of these challenges are quite elementary, right? Demonstrate humility. Think abundantly. Listen first. Make it safe for others to tell you the truth. Model work-life balance. Identify your wildly important goals. They're very kind of pragmatic, but as Dr. Covey said, you know, common knowledge isn't always common practice. So I wrote this book. Each chapter is about 4 or 5 pages, very easy. The whole book's 2.5 hours. I wrote it to be a very light book. This is not, you know, War and Peace. It's meant to be a funny book, relatable book. But each of the challenges, I share one of my kind of horror stories. Occasionally I share a success, but at the end of each chapter, what I think the readers are liking the most, according to the Amazon reviews, is I send everybody kind of out with a challenge. Now go try this. Go meet with someone who rubs you the wrong way, who makes you be reactive, and think about what is it that they do that rubs you the wrong way, and enter the meeting with a different mindset. Change your paradigm. Go test this. Think of a situation where you always get your dander up and you say things you regret. What is it about that project, that person, that product that always gets you on edge, and kind of peel the onion? So each chapter has that exercise, and I think it's allowed people not just to read a philosophical leadership book, but to really get tangibly and say, oh my gosh, this is a mess for me, or this is a success. I'm quite good at that. I think it's the difference in the book.
Yeah, and it's funny. I know there's so many books out there on leadership, sales, whatever the topic might be, and they're very theoretical, or they're very very high level.
Academic.
Where, yes, very academic. And then you finish reading, you go, yeah, like, yeah, 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 yeah. And then you,
What do I do?
And I'm all about the how-tos, because it's sharing information is a wonderful thing. Telling people what to do with that information to bring them to the next level, you know, that's another skill. And I want to go back. You said listening. You know, listening, I think, in our society is truly an optional skill. Hearing, unless, God forbid, we're hearing impaired, is mandatory. Listening is an optional skill. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, in the chapters, how you talk about that listening skill, because it's imperative. We don't. We talk.
So
we take turns talking. We take turns talking at each other. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. It shows you're a good coach that you picked that one out of the 30. You know, I think when you become a leader, you've spent a lot of time being trained to communicate. You're always in persuasion mode. You're in influence mode. You're mastering the stage and the microphone, your message. You're pounding it home. Leaders are paid to solve things and have the answers. And so listening is a bit counterintuitive to most leaders. It actually is a leadership competency. It's a communication skill that great leaders show empathy. We hear a lot about empathy right now. It's a leadership competency. And it's counterintuitive. So I would advise everyone, think about how you can become a better listener. There's some easy tips I share in the book. Most of us, when we're listening, we're on our own timeline, our own agenda, and our own field of experience, and our own narrative. And we're just waiting for the other person to shut up. And oftentimes, we want to, you know, kind of ask questions to solve. And that seems well-intended, but it's actually quite selfish, because you're asking questions on your own timeline, on your own narrative, right? And so I would argue that the best listeners are not the best question askers, because most of your questions solve your need to know, not their need to feel heard. So for those out there that are struggling with listening, think of a couple things. Stop talking. It's the first tip. If you're an interrupter, which all of us are, the next time you're tempted to interrupt, I want you to do what Connie is doing right now. She's gently placing her upper and lower lip together. She's not, she's just placing her lips together, because you can't talk when your lips are closed. Because why most of us interrupt, the psychology shows, is that we have a paradigm of how long Connie should be talking, or how long Tim should be talking. And when we think subconsciously that you should be done, we interrupt to solve the problem or start talking. So stop interrupting. The next time you're tempted, close your lips gently and count to seven.
It's interesting. I remember, I'm giggling, a long time ago, I had a regional manager. My first job was selling insurance, and it was 40 men or 42 men and me, right? I was a trailblazer back then. We had this, the regional manager was awesome. And I remember every Friday morning we'd have an 8 o'clock meeting, you know, sales meeting, and talk ideas and have training and what have you. And this, it has to be 30 something years ago. He said, you have two ears, one mouth. You should be listening at minimum twice as much as you speak. And Scott, let's face it, we're all visual learners. That stuck with me from that moment on. And I thought, oh, if I'm talking in front of the client and blah, 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 and always pitching, how do I really know what they need? From that moment on, my sales changed, my numbers increased, because I went into listening mode. And even beyond listening, I think when you truly learn the skill, communication, listening, combination, all of a sudden you create empathy, because you're hearing where the other person is coming from, and all of a sudden it becomes so evident what they need, or how you can potentially help them, or what really is the core problem that they're facing, that you could swoop in and remedy for them. So again, two ears, one mouth. We should be listening twice as much as we speak, right?
I think it's especially challenging in a sales role, mm-hmm. because we're taught how to ask, you know, smart questions and peel the onion and get to the root of the cause. And asking questions is quite selfish. Listening is selfless.
Great.
And if you can train yourself to check your ego, check your need to feel important, check your need to share all your information, to your point and to your own validation, you'll exponentiate your influence and your sales and your career if you can make that switch. It's tough. No one has said it's easy. I haven't mastered it. you and I have been prattling on for, you know, 45 minutes now. We're incented to communicate and speak. Look at Ted, right? Ted is not listening. Ted is talking, right? It's not called. Ted listens. But it's good advice for everybody.
I love it. This is another great. See, I'm a visual learner, Scott. I love it. I love those little visual clues. You're so funny. We are out of time. This went mind-blowingly fast for me. I hope it did for you as well. So, guys, here's the deal. Number one, summer's upon us. Thank you so much. Please go out, buy the book, leaders. We all need guidance and help. And Scott, you do such a great job of, like you said, your messes, owning your messes and sharing those stories. And I think when we could be brutally honest like that, that's where people go, oh, I've done that too. Or, oh, you know, my boss did that. How can I not make that same mistake or remedy it? Great book for reading in the summer. Go to franklincovey.com. And should I send them to /management or?
You know, they can go to managementmess.com. That's the site for the book. Or just go to Amazon and buy it. Amazon and Walmart are in a pricing war. They both have it down to $12.20. So I'm their darling right now. I'm loving that.
Yes. And all the listeners should be loving it too. $12 for a good book to read on the beach. I love it. I think it's great. So managementmess.com. Yes?
Connie, enjoy the summer at your house. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. True pleasure. You guys, if you need to get in touch with me, reach me at Connie@WhitmanAssociates.com. And my partner and I, my second business, we're still offering, talking about communication with Scott today, free communication style assessment. Just go to wisdomdecoded.com. We've updated the reports, and there's a companion book if you'd like to read more about that as well. Guys, communication, it really is the critical skill I think that we all need to become the leaders that we really are destined to become. Again, managementmess.com. Buy the book. Read it. It will help all of us. Scott, thanks for being such a great guest on the show and sharing some laughs. I always appreciate laughing. I think it's important.
Your positivity is contagious. I'm better now from having listened to you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I live to be positive. And back at you. I think you have wonderful energy, too. I hope you guys will join us weekly as we question, build, and discover together that I know change is hard, guys. We've got this. And I have great leaders and great guests like Scott to come on and show you the way and make it a lot easier than you can. The book is just another alternative to help you guys read your way to the next level of success. Thank you all again for joining me. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. I wish you all an inspired week. And please go out and buy the book. Do something differently and inspire your people. They deserve it, and you deserve it as well. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks, Scott.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, whitmanassoc.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.